before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of segments this month and a couple of great interviews, so let's jump right into it. First up, beer news. Following the unanimous vote by the Alcohol Beverage Control Board on October 3rd, on November 13th, the Marijuana Control Board voted 3-2 to concur in removing the state's top alcohol and marijuana regulator, Erica McConnell. The following day, Governor Dunleavy appointed Glenn Klinkhart as interim director. Klinkhart is a well-known retired police detective, true crime author, and public speaker, who was most recently asked by the Dunleavy administration to help repair the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. At the Alcohol Beverage Control Board's meeting in November, the board voted unanimously not to adopt the proposed regulation defining other recreational or gaming opportunities to include festivals, games and competitions, classes, public parties, presentations or performances, and other social gatherings advertised to the general public. The board received 1,270 public comments, of which only 4 were in favor of the new proposed definition. Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board Director Erica McConnell asked the board during the meeting if that means the matter is closed, and Board Chairman Bob Klein said it is. She also asked if, in effect, that means AMCO staff should ignore the other recreational activities portion of regulations. Klein said, for now, yes, but egregious matters should be brought to the board. The vote on the failed definition change had drawn public attention for months since it was announced in late April. In a letter to vendors, volunteers, and partners on November 21st, Steve Shepard, the president of Aurora Productions, made a surprise announcement that the 2020 Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival had been canceled. For the last 26 years, the mid-January event has been the biggest beer festival in Alaska and the anchor event of Alaska Beer Week. In his letter, Shepard stated, "The economics of continuing the festival just don't pencil out in the current economy." Given that the festival has continued to sell out each year, even with rising ticket prices, there's been much public speculation on just why things no longer pencil out. I contacted Aurora Productions and asked for additional details, but have received no response as of this report being recorded. I have had reports that the Brewers Guild of Alaska is scrambling to put together some sort of replacement event, but no details are currently available. Valdez Brewing Company at 141 Galena Drive in Valdez opened for business today, Saturday, November 30th. We wish them the best of luck. Anchorage Brewing Company has purchased a beverage dispensary license. The transfer went into effect on Tuesday, October 22nd. Owner Gabe Fletcher stated that he had purchased the additional license not out of a desire to sell hard liquor, but as a way to avoid the restrictions currently placed on brewery taprooms. Quote, "It allows us to just have a little more freedom with our business and do the kinds of things that we want to do, like stay open later. We can serve more than 3 12-ounce beers," end quote. While Fletcher didn't want to discuss the price he paid for his license, he said they typically run in the range of $250,000 to $300,000. Owning such a license means he can now do things like serve beers from other breweries have live entertainment, and allow patrons to play games like darts or cribbage. On October 30th, the Molson Coors Brewing announced that it was laying off 500 workers worldwide and restructuring its operations in the face of declining beer sales. The company expects to save $150 million by closing offices in Denver and making Chicago its North American headquarters. Its brewery in Golden, Colorado will remain. Molson Coors says it needs to streamline and bring new products to market more quickly, like the canned wine and hard coffee it introduced this year. It's also dropping brewing from its name to emphasize that it makes more than beer. It will become Molson Coors Beverage Company in January. The company's beer brands include Miller, Molson, Coors, and Foster's. It also makes Henry's Hard Soda. Molson Coors sales fell by 3% to $8.1 billion in the first 9 months of this year. After initially choosing not to purchase the remaining shares of the Craft Brew Alliance in August, Anheuser-Busch InBev has changed its mind, agreeing to purchase the remaining CBA shares it does not already own. The global beer behemoth currently owns a 31.2% stake in CBA and has offered $16.50 in cash for each of the remaining shares. The CBA consists of Kona Brewing, its biggest asset by far, Red Hook Brewing, Widmer Brothers, Omission, Appalachian Mountain Brewing, Cisco Brewers, Wynwood Brewing, Square Mile Cider, and PH Experiment. If it had exercised its option in August, AB would have paid a predetermined price of $24.50 per share, or close to $500 million, versus a $20 million fee to decline the purchase. Not surprisingly, that initial decision to decline the purchase drove the share price down to $7.33 per share, which has allowed AB to make the purchase now at the much lower price. In the last 3 years alone, AB has invested more than $130 million in its roster of formerly independent breweries, allowing them to expand their production volume by an average of 31% post-acquisition. New Belgian Brewing announced on November 18th that the employee-owned company is selling to Australian-based Lion Little World Beverages, which is owned in turn by the Japanese brewing conglomerate Kirin. New Belgium is currently the largest craft brewery in Colorado and the fourth largest in the U.S., behind Yingling, Boston Beer, and Sierra Nevada, according to the Brewers Association. The Fort Collins-based brewery's cash sale for an undisclosed amount is expected to finalize by the end of the year, pending approval by employee stock owners. More than 300 of New Belgium's employee owners will receive more than $100,000 in retirement money through the deal, with some receiving significantly greater amounts. Lion Little World is now the largest brewer in Australia and the largest alcoholic beverage company in New Zealand, with big beer and smaller brands from XXXX to Bogues, Malt Shovel, and its original Little Creatures Microbrewery, which also has outposts in Hong Kong, Singapore, London, and San Francisco, according to its website. With this sale, New Belgium will no longer meet the Brewers Association's definition of a craft brewery. Every year since its debut in the fall of 1988, Alaskan Brewing Company has released the latest vintage of their award-winning smoked porter. The beer has become the most award-winning beer in the history of the Great American Beer Festival, as well as the most coveted beers of its style. Most recently, Alaskan Smoked Porter added another medal to its long list of awards, taking silver at the European Beer Star Awards. Quote, "The fact that our smoked porter continues to be internationally recognized is a testament to our amazing crew who produce a consistently high-quality beer that has stood the test of time," said Alaskan Brewing Company co-founder Marcy Larson. "Unlike most brews, Alaskan Smoked Porter ages well over time, much like wine," explained Larson. "Aging smoked porter develops in flavor and complexity and can mellow out the smokiness. No one vintage ages in the same way, and it's exciting to taste the different nuanced flavors that start to come out each year," end quote. Alaskan smoked porter is dark and robust with a complex smoky flavor that comes from five different types of malt, with selected malts being smoked over alder wood. Quote, our brewers were inspired by the wood-fired smokers used to smoke salmon in southeast Alaska and came up with the idea to smoke malt over alder wood, explained Larson. The alder wood gives the beer a uniquely Alaskan quality that other smoked beers don't possess. It's mellow and slightly sweet compared to traditional Rausch beers, end quote. 2019 Alaskan Smoked Porter was released on November 1st and is widely available across Alaska. A new holiday celebrating small and independent U.S. craft breweries will take place tomorrow, Sunday, December 1st. The Brewers Association, the non-for-profit trade association dedicated to small and independent American brewers, has created the inaugural Small Brewery Sunday celebration to encourage craft beer lovers to support craft brewers and seek the Independent Craft Brewer Seal, a certified mark that identifies beer brewed by independent brewers. Small Brewery Sunday aims to support craft brewers during one of the busiest shopping weekends in the U.S. and highlight their contributions as small businesses. As I reported last month, according to the 2018 Economic Impact Report released by the Brewers Association, the craft brewing industry contributed $79.1 billion to the U.S. economy and provided 559,545 total jobs. In addition to providing jobs and a space for community building, craft brewers also support tens of thousands of nonprofits and charitable organizations. According to the Brewers Association, craft brewers gave an estimated $92.6 million to charitable organizations in 2018. Quote, every dollar a beer lover spends at a craft brewery and buying their craft beer at stores and restaurants fuels a small business that supports the economic health of its local community, said Julie Hertz, craft beer program director of Brewers Association. Small Brewery Sunday gives us beer lovers a formal reminder that when we buy a growler, crowler, six-pack, or pint, we are supporting small brewery businesses and helping them keep their doors open, lights on, and fermentation tanks full. That's it for beer news this month. Up next, we'll have an interview with Girdwood Brewing Company. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Up next, we've got an interview with the folks from Girdwood Brewing Company, Brett and Rory Marenko, and Josh Hegna. Thanks for talking to us, guys.
Thanks for having us, Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, really appreciate you taking the time out. So first thing I'd want to chat with you about is this wonderful graphic that you guys produced. Extremely informative for our listeners. It's going to be posted on our website when the recorded version of this interview gets posted. A lot of people have probably already seen it on the internet. So it really illustrates how Alaska's breweries are hamstrung compared to other breweries in quota states. So why don't you guys tell me a little bit about what precipitated this and the research you did to create it?
Hi, Bill. This is Josh. Yes, I'll take this one. I think we started this quota states research based on the fact that there was a lot of bad information, quite frankly, going around about breweries and quota states or pay to play or limited entry states having less privileges than us. So we went into this, started digging up the research and, you know, pulled up all the quota states that were available and, you know, kind of compared it to the pour limits, the hours and the entertainment. We had heard that we have, you know, pretty good laws according to these quota states. But the reality is, after doing this research, you know, we realized, hey, we definitely need to modernize these brewery laws. So We did the research by calling up brewers guilds, getting on the Brewers Association website, but mostly it was brewers guilds and brewers associations in these quota states. We were really looking to dress it up, so we used our in-house creative, Tim Ball, to create that graphic. So I'd like to give him a put up for that.
Well, I know you guys did some pretty extensive research because I've seen the spreadsheet that accompanies this graphic that breaks it out by state by state. Honestly, even as much attention as I paid to the brewery laws, I didn't realize just how bad things were here in Alaska, mainly because I guess you run into some states that are quota states and some states that aren't. And I guess for our listeners, we should define what a quota state is. A quota state is where the number of licenses in the market are limited by the state. It's a limited entry system. A lot of states out there are not quota states in the sense that there's no limit on the number of liquor licenses that can be issued in a given area. Alaska is a quota state. It always has been since the end of Prohibition. But once again, looking at this in comparison to the other quota states, it's pretty obvious that we are really on the hind tit, as my old man would say, when it comes to what we're allowed to do. Specifically, for example, none of the other states except Montana have any limit on the amount of beer that can be served. We here in Alaska are limited to 36. In Montana, they can serve 48, and all of the other quota states have no limit on it. The other quota states don't have any limit on forms of entertainment. And only Montana has an 8 o'clock last call like we do in Alaska. So when you put all that together, it makes it very clear that we're really behind the curve here. So kudos to you guys for pulling that together.
Yeah, thanks. It was, you know, that was one of the biggest arguments that we've been hearing as we, you know, try to modernize these laws is that, you know, because we're a quota state, it doesn't matter what we're not allowed to do. And so, yeah, we just kind of wanted to shed some light on that and draw awareness to our cause and the need to modernize. And I think we can, you know, at least do as well as Utah.
Yeah, you would think we can at least do as well as Utah or Montana. And obviously, the first step is educating the public. Have you guys got anybody out there, let's say, in the legislature who might be want to carry some water for you on this issue?
We threw this out there and we kind of let it sit for a little bit. We haven't really pushed it. I know the Brewers Guild is meeting with legislators saying, I don't know the stance on them. It's my understanding that, you know, we're in support of SB 52. I'd like to say we're in support of SB 52. We'd like to see this entertainment get changed. I know Senator Maticki would too. And we're hoping that, you know, now this can, you know, bring the pours and the hours into the conversation as well. If it's truly meant to modernize laws in Alaska, alcohol laws, I think this shows, you know, that we're a little bit way behind the times.
And I think it's worth bringing up, like, you know, initially, just because we're in the business and we're beer tourists elsewhere, I think we had an idea that Alaska was a little behind, but this was really just, initially it was just a knowledge tool by us to find out what is happening elsewhere. And it really opened our eyes and we were actually kind of taken back by it. Like, wow. So we just wanted to put the facts out there for everybody.
I definitely agree. This was an eye opener to me because like you say, you visit somewhere and you think, oh, this is really not as tough as Alaska, but they're probably not a quota state or something like that. And then when you actually do the real hard research, it becomes clear that, yeah, even among quota states, we are way, way behind. So I'm sure you guys have been following with the recent developments with the ABC board, and I think the results of their regulatory proposal, the public's reaction to that definitely demonstrates that the public is on the side of the breweries at this point.
Yeah, agreed. We called in and listened to the testimony that took place, and you know, there was a lot of healthy discussion going on there. We were super thankful to see the outpouring of support. And Bill, I got to tell you, I browsed through those 1,200 pages and flagged a bunch of people that we wanted to thank from Gerber Brewing Company. We appreciate you actually writing a letter in support of modernization, too. So thank you for that.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Like I said, I'm one of the public here. I got an opinion on this, too. But what was amazing to me is I believe they said they had 1,270 responses submitted, and of those, 4 were in favor of the new regulation. So when things are running 99.7% against the proposal, it's pretty obvious that the public doesn't think that this is something that is the right direction in which to go.
And I think that's our kind of consensus with the new director in place. So we're hopefully just pivoting back in a more logical, more reasonable direction than the rabbit hole we had been headed down.
Well, that's enough about the laws and the quota states and everything. What's up with you guys at the brewery?
We're moving through shoulder season here in Girdwood, you know, coming off a stellar summer tourism season and jonesing for some more snow so the mountain can open up. But it's been a pretty good season for us so far. We've been coming out doing some fundraising beers. We did one for the local fire department for their 60th anniversary, Engine 41. That's a little bit out of our wheelhouse, or not out of our wheelhouse, out of the norm of what we've been brewing. You know, as far as the hazy beers go, it was a more West Coast stylistic APA. And then most recently, we came back out with Abby Savvy, our double IPA that benefits the Chugatz Friends of the National Avalanche Information Center.
That sounds great. Are you guys got any expansion plans or anything in the works?
Yeah, there's definitely some wheels turning behind the scenes still. We're getting all the permits in place. Hopefully, maybe by next spring, we'll have some more space to work with.
Well, we do have some more tanks that are going to be here end of November here, so that's going to expand our production capacity a little bit as well.
How much new tankage are you looking at?
Oh, we got 3 new 20-barrel serving tanks.
Okay.
So that'll cut down on some labor, some kegging, the time associated with kegging, and then also open a little more cold storage space for us. In addition, we have a canning line we've been talking about getting maybe within the next year or so.
Are you guys going to be canning 16s or 12s?
Well, the current thought would be to, you know, 16-ounce 4-packs, capitalize on that market share.
Well, that all sounds good. Any plans to bring food in the equation? I know you guys have been having food trucks there pretty religiously during the summer. Are you guys thinking about adding a kitchen or anything like that to your operation?
Bill, I think we're going to stick to the beer and just focus on beer. And the food trucks are kind of on hold for right now. You know, it's shoulder season. It's a little cold, so... But yeah, we're just going to stick to the beer. I don't think we want anything to do with food.
We barely have enough space for the beer.
Yeah. Well, speaking of it getting cold, any chance we might see you guys down here for our Frozen River Festival in February?
Yeah, we haven't attended that one yet, but I think we are aiming to attend it this year. It sounds like it's always a good time.
That'll be excellent. Be a pleasure to have you guys down here.
Around the time of year, they have the Fur Rondi Beer Fest, which we're committed to because for 2 years in a row, we've gotten the People's Choice Best Brewery. We got a big WWF belt in our tap room. So we got to go defend our title there too, but we'll see if we can branch out.
That's one of my complaints is we were scheduled first and they keep scheduling that Fur Rondi Fest right on top of Frozen River Fest. But what can you do? It's Anchorage. Well, hey guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We appreciate it. And once again, well done on this graphic. Like I said, I encourage all our listeners, if they haven't seen it yet, to check it out on kdll.org and see what we're talking about. We'll keep spreading the word. All right, guys. Well, hey, thanks so much. And let us know if anything new pops, and hopefully we'll see you in February.
Sounds good. Always good to talk with you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. Your host, Bill Howell, will be right back with our next segment.
Have you ever wondered how much fish we sell on the Kenai, or how much oil comes from here, what it's all worth, and what it all means? Well, we have too. That's why we created Econ 919, a weekly look at the Kenai Peninsula's economy, what makes it work, and who makes it work. Tune in each Friday at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. for new numbers, emerging trends, and a bit of trivia. Econ 919, Friday mornings at 9 and again at 5, right here on KDLL, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. In this month's feature, I'd like to talk to you a bit about the secondary beer market. It's the time of year when people start thinking about purchasing gifts for the special people in their life. Since you're listening to this program, I think it's a safe assumption that you or someone you love really likes beer. That being the case, you may one day consider purchasing a beer from what's known as the secondary beer market. The term secondary beer market refers to beers that are purchased and then resold by individuals other than licensed distributors and retailers. It's a bit of a gray market, as these transactions are technically illegal, since any sale of alcohol requires licenses from various levels of government, but are typically occurring on such a small scale that it isn't worth anyone's time to try and enforce it. If you know where to look online, you can find offering of various rare beers for sale for tens or even hundreds of times their retail price. Opportunistic sellers in the alcohol space are nothing new. It's been commonplace in wine for decades. The same is true for spirits. But the craft beer industry's relatively young age, coupled with an increasing number of small breweries that are creating world-class beers in limited quantities, means there's more demand than there is supply. For those lucky enough to get their hands on a bottle or two, the temptation to sell it well beyond the MSRP is often a pull too strong to resist. A primary topic of discussion surrounding the secondary beer market is the prices that people pay. In the wine industry, it's less shocking when someone spends hundreds or even thousands of dollars on a bottle. Why can't beer be the same? The secondary market and inflated prices aren't going to normalize the concept of high-end beer prices in the mainstream, but we should be far more accepting of beer as a luxury item. However, while the desire to obtain such beers might just be for the love of them, it can also be related to the status they convey upon the buyer. The antipathy towards beer being treated as a status symbol is understandable. People get riled when someone has enough money that they don't need to bother with purchasing rare beers on the release date, but can instead pick them up on the secondary market for an inflated price. The same goes for people who buy beers because it reflects how they want to be seen. It's like people spending a lot of money on wine, whiskey, clothes, or cars. However, this clashes with many people's perceptions of what beer is and the enjoyment they get from it. As you might imagine, few brewers are pleased by the idea of someone buying a bottle of one of their beers for $20 and then turning around and reselling it for $1,500. It's only natural that the brewer, who's working hard to keep their business profitable, pay their employees, provide them benefits like health insurance, would be irritated when they see someone earning 100 times the brewer's profit margin by simply reselling a beer illegally. Apart from the loss in potential profit that breweries could face, the other major issue is that of quality. The importance of freshness and of appropriate cellaring and storage is still an educative process among beer drinkers around the world. There are no positives in people paying exorbitant prices for beer if it's stored poorly or cellared when it should be enjoyed fresh. Pity the poor brewer that saw his hoppy beer sold for 3 times the retail price, only to pop up online a year later with a negative review. Brewers fight back in a variety of ways. These days, many of the most sought-after beers are only sold directly by the brewery, with sales being limited to 1 or 2 bottles per customer. For example, it wasn't that many years ago when you could find Anchorage Brewing Company's A Deal with the Devil Barley Wine for sale at package stores around Anchorage following its yearly release. Local beer aficionados would drive around town, hoovering them up for their beer sellers. These days, if you want a bottle, you can stand in line outside the brewery for several hours on the beer's release day before being allowed inside to make your limited purchase. Despite the best efforts of breweries like Anchorage, many people try to skirt the bottle limit rules so that they can quickly turn the package around online for a profit. Folks bring spouses, uninterested or on-the-wagon friends, even grandparents with them to snag extra bottles that they have no intention of drinking. There are even websites and forums where people offer to stand in line for others for a substantial fee so that the secondary market traders don't even need to leave the Saturday morning comfort of a couch and pajamas at home. I've talked to Anchorage Brewing Company owner Gabe Pletcher about this, and he acknowledged that despite all his efforts, he inevitably sees his limited release beers on offer on the secondary market within a few days at highly inflated prices. There's an argument to be made that once you've paid for a beer, you can do what you like with it. This is the case with other consumer goods, from cars to sneakers to electronics. But it's also clear that buyers have a degree of responsibility when it comes to the secondary beer market. Sadly, it's a responsibility not everyone seems to be equipped to deal with. Personally, I steer clear of the secondary beer market. Over the years, thanks to the generosity of friends, I've been lucky enough to get to sample certain beers which were very hard to obtain and could have commanded some truly amazing prices on the secondary market. After sampling those, as well as thousands of other beers, I can say with confidence that I have yet to taste a beer that I thought was worth $100 a bottle, much less 10 or 20 times that amount. Throughout history, beer has always been the beverage of the common man and priced accordingly. There are simply too many outstanding beers for sale at reasonable prices for me to be willing to fork over so much of my hard-earned cash for any single beer, no matter how good or rare it might be. So if you're looking to purchase beer as a Christmas gift for the beer lover in your life, I'd recommend that you steer clear of the secondary beer market. Instead of spending $100 on a bottle of beer purchased online, head over to one of our local package stores or breweries and pick up a nice brew for less than $10 a bottle. Then buy 9 more just like it. I guarantee your beer-loving friend will thank you. We'll be right back with our next segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier.